That's great. All right. So we're going to get started here, looking at God's Word together. It's something that we like to do each week when we're together. This is a great week. If this is your first time or you have just been coming the last few weeks, it's a great week to be with us as we start in a new series together. And it's kind of a big week in some parts of the political world, isn't it? We've got Theresa May giving a big speech on Tuesday, outlining her global Britain Brexit plan. You've got an inauguration in the United States, a swearing-in ceremony for the new president on Friday. Yes, that is happening. And it's got me thinking about a very specific question. If I were to tell you a story of God coming to visit our world, maybe even in the form of a man, how would you expect that person to behave? Would there be big ceremonies and parades? Would there be block parties and street feasts? Would there be festivals? Would there be big speeches and followed by huge queues around the block to shake hands with this person and to meet and greet? Here's another question. Would God lord it over all of humanity and make sure that we sort of bow down before him in sort of reverence and sort of lord over it, sort of a benevolent supreme ruler? I get this picture of like Despicable Me, you know that movie, and the famous Felonious Gru and his minions, you know, the little yellow pill-shaped guys. Like, is that what it would be like if God came to earth? Would we be like the minions, as comic as that is, in sort of our subservience to this God? Well, if you're a Christian, you do believe that God did visit this world in the form of his son Jesus, who was both fully God and fully man. And we have this story recorded for us in the Bible that tells us what Jesus was like. And here's the thing, it's surprising. It's not like what we would expect when God comes to visit his people. And Christians even like to tell this story, the story of God coming to visit his people in the person of Jesus. We'd like to describe it as the good news. So when the story gets told, even in the book that we're about to look at together in this next series, it gets described as good news. Mark chapter 1, verse 1 says this, the beginning of the good news about Jesus, the Messiah. It's described as good news when God comes to visit his people. So we're going to open up the book of Mark in this next series. It kind of leads us all the way to the point on the cross and the resurrection, and that's where we're headed, and we're going to see Jesus on the move. So if you want to join with me, it's in Mark, it's in the Bibles right behind you in your seats. It's on page 959 where we start. You've got it. We're in a live crowd this morning. This is exciting. Page 959 in the Bibles right behind you. Mark tells his story. You know, let me tell you a little bit about Mark, the writer. He's really interesting. It's probably John Mark of the New Testament, if you recognize that name. He wasn't one of the original apostles, so he didn't follow around Jesus and see all of this stuff. He got what he writes here. He writes kind of secondhand through Peter, one of the followers of Jesus, through his eyewitness testimony and his memory. And so you've got a picture of Jesus told through the story. It was probably written actually after Peter died. And what's really interesting about the way Mark writes is it's kind of hard to follow the outline. There's not really a logical flow. It doesn't really move in sequence of events the way some of the other books do. It's actually more of like a collage of just episodes of Jesus constantly on the move. In fact, that's what we're calling this series, Jesus on the Move. Because Jesus is constantly moving. All of the verbs are kind of active. You get a whole bunch of just the word immediate shows up a whole bunch of times. And you get this idea of Jesus just constantly moving on to the next thing, to the next thing. He's focused. He's on the move. He moves quickly, and he does his thing. You see miracles. You see demons being cast out. And you get a lot more of Jesus in action than you get of his teachings, which is just really interesting. I get the idea that Mark would have made a really great YouTube channel maker, right? He would be a YouTuber. He would just show these short little episodes of Jesus' life and then move on to the next thing, kind of out of sequence, kind of out of order. It's like a collage of images. So why Mark's book for us? Why now? Some of us are new on the journey of following Jesus, and maybe you're curious to know more about who Jesus is and what it means to follow him if Jesus is on the move. And some of us have been around for a long time. We've kind of heard all the stories before, and yet I wonder, does it still surprise us? Does it still challenge us? I actually think there's something for all of us in the book of Mark. We're going to see Jesus on the move, more of what he's doing than what he's saying. And in the actions, whether they're miracles or all kinds of things that we see Jesus doing, heading towards the cross, we see him as a suffering servant. That's really kind of the theme that we're going to see. As we look at Mark, we see Jesus coming to serve. It's like he flips it around. He turns it upside down. It isn't, here's God walking on earth and everybody doing everything that they can to serve, but Jesus flips it around to serve people. And so you get this amazing story that's sort of Jesus in action and Jesus headed where he's going and he knows where he's going. And that's really kind of the main thing we're going to see in today's story. We're jumping forward in the story. We're not starting right in Mark chapter 1. We're starting in chapter 10. And we're picking up kind of where we left off in Luke last year, if you were with us. But what you see is Jesus knows where he's going, and he knows who he is and what he's about, and he knows why he's going there. That's really what we're going to see. So let's look together. Let's start right now just in verse 32 of Mark chapter 10. It's on page 959. We're kind of fast forwarding to this moment where Jesus begins his journey straight to Jerusalem. And so they were on their way up to Jerusalem, verse 32, with Jesus leading the way, which is always really a great place to begin, headed somewhere with Jesus leading the way. And the disciples, those are the people that are following Jesus closely, that he'd chosen to come with him on this journey because Jesus is on the move. The disciples, they're astonished, and those who followed were afraid. Now, why are they astonished and afraid? I kind of wonder if it's because they see this guy's moving with pace. He's on the move. He's got focus. He knows where he's headed. He's moving quickly. And here's where I get that. It's in the next verse. Jesus takes the 12 aside, and he tells them what he's up to. And this is a spoiler alert, okay? Big story, spoiler alert. So close your ears if you don't want to hear. He says, this is where I'm going, and this is what's going to happen. Verse 33. Not just me, but we together are going up to Jerusalem. He knows where he's going. And he said, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. So this is actually, it's the religious authorities that are going to be a part of the story here. And they will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles. That's the Roman leaders. And then listen to how specific Jesus is about where he's headed and what's going to happen. And this is his goal. This is his focus. I think that's why they're astonished and surprised. He says, these leaders will mock him, verse 34, and spit on him, and flog him, and kill him. And 3 days later, he will rise. Now, if you had read the first 9 chapters, you would have already heard this 2 times. Jesus is focused. It's astonishing. He's focused. He's headed to Jerusalem, and he says, this is going to be what happens. Spoiler alert, I'm handed over to the religious authorities, then I'm handed over to the Roman authorities, and I'm mocked and spat upon and beaten, and I'm killed. And 3 days later, I'm alive again. So it's a familiar message that his disciples have already heard, but they still don't quite get it. They don't get it. They've heard it this is the 3rd time now. Jesus knows exactly where he's headed. Everything else about why he came and what he's doing along the way points us to this. And that's really the journey we're going to step into as we look at this over the next several weeks, leading up to Easter. This is where I'm headed, Jesus says. But do the followers get it? Do they understand? No. I mean, in the very next story, this is what happens, verse 35. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, they came to him. And I kind of imagine this sort of off to the side, sort of a little secret powwow with Jesus as they head down the road. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Now, what's the difference between that statement and prayer, right? Because we've spent a week praying and we've spent a week asking Jesus for what we want. And then I think if you look at the intention here, it's subtle, but it's in those words. We want you, Jesus, to do for us whatever we ask. It's in the attitude and the intention. Especially when Jesus responds the way he does and they clarify what it is that they want. I love Jesus' attitude, though, and this is where you see Jesus as the servant. Because he doesn't brush it off. He actually responds the way a servant would respond. How can I help? Look at verse 36. What do you want me to do for you? He asked. So gentle, so humble, like a servant. Verse 37, they replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. So here they are being bold enough to ask for position, right? I want to be at your right. Maybe my brother can be at the left. We'll figure out which one later. But one of us wants to be at your right. One of us wants to be at your left. And we want everything that you have. We want to be in your glory. We want to be there. They've got the wrong idea of who Jesus is and what he came to do. I think they're imagining we're headed to Jerusalem. And yeah, he said he'd be killed and he'd come to life. But he's really going to be a religious ruler. He's going to be the king. He's going to rescue us from the domination system of Rome. He's going to be in power. And you know what? I want to be in the room where it happens. I want to be right on the right side and the left side. And I want to share some of that glory. That sounds really good, Jesus. Verse 38. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with? It's almost as though he's saying, didn't you just hear what I've said? I've said it three times now. I'm headed towards somewhere you probably don't want to go. Can you really handle that? Verse 39, we can. They answered again, just so clueless, so ambitious, right? Their religious fervor for power and privilege means that they think they can handle it because they've got Jesus and they've got, they've been around long enough. They've trained for this. We can, they say. And Jesus says to them, you will drink the cup. You'll drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. But to sit at my right or my left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they've been prepared. Jesus knows where he's going, but he also knows who he is. He knows his place. Do you hear the voice of a servant in this? This isn't for me to grant. I have a higher authority, which is my Father. I don't give out these spots. I'm obedient to what my Father wants and desires. Jesus, the servant, says, that's not for me to decide. And he says, these places are for those for whom they've been prepared. That's the voice of a servant who's laid out the table, who's prepared the food. Someone else has arranged the seating. I'm just here to serve. And the disciples in their adventures of missing the point and their lack of focus on what's truly important, which is Jesus and where he's headed, they miss it too. Verse 41. When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Notice where their attention is. It's not on Jesus and where he's going. It's on the political infighting and jockeying for position and influence. So they're mad at James and John. And you have to picture Jesus at this point, just kind of, oh, these guys. Why'd I have to pick them? So he says, let's huddle up. Let's have a team meeting. Verse 42. Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them. You know what the system's like. You know how oppressive and heavy-handed it is. And that their high officials exercise authority over them, that's just as relevant today as it was then. But not so with you. Jesus says, my kingdom needs to look different. Verse 43, instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Notice that he doesn't actually call out the desire to be great. He doesn't say shame on you for wanting to be great. He says, you want to be great? Great. I love that. If you want to be great, here's the way you do it. Here's the pathway to greatness. It's upside down. It's actually being a servant. Whoever wants to become great among you must be like a slave, he says in verse 44. Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. So if we want to be great like Jesus, we have to follow him where he's willing to go. And we have to learn to serve and to become the slave of all. That's a hard word. And yet it's an invitation to something that's totally upside down from the way the world works, even in 2017. And then here's verse 45 is kind of like the key to this text, and it's also the key to really the whole book. So everything else that happens from this point forward on the journey, this is kind of like our GPS signal honing in on what Jesus is about. Verse 45, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now, that's one verse, but it's so rich that we need to sort of unpack it just a little bit. So I want to do that, and then I want to call us to it as a church. For even the Son of Man, this is where Jesus, he uses this phrase, Son of Man. It's one of his favorite expressions for himself. When you hear Jesus talking about himself, he often uses this phrase, and it's actually a callback to something that's way back in the Old Testament. The older stories about who Jesus was, sort of forecasting who this promised one would be. So Daniel 7, 13 and 14 reads like this. I'll just read it to you. You don't have to go there. But we actually sang it this morning, which is really great. Daniel 7, 13 and 14. Daniel has a vision. In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a Son of Man. That's the phrase. And Jesus calls back to that, Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. And he approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence, and he was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and people of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. That Son of Man. So you have Jesus in authority and dominion and an everlasting kingdom, and yet, what kind of Son of Man will this be? In verse 45, he didn't come to be served, but to serve. So that's an echo of another prophecy about who this Jesus would be from Isaiah 53. Listen to these words. So you've got the Son of Man in all of his glory and greatness and authority. Kings and kingdoms will bow down. That's what we're saying this morning. And yet, in Isaiah, it points to this. It says, he had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing in his appearance that we would desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind. He lived a life of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces. He was despised and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and he bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted, but he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. The Son of Man did not come to be served, Jesus says, but to serve. So how did he serve? Well, we're going to see. That's really the story of the rest of Mark, is everywhere he goes, he stops. Even though he's on the move and he's headed to Jerusalem, to the cross and to resurrection, he stops to serve. He heals blind people. He casts out demons. He invites people to a party. He tells stories. He came to serve. But how did Jesus serve? Ultimately, he came, and it's the second half of verse 45, to give his life as a ransom for many. That word ransom, that means the price of release. It's understood in this kind of text is, it's like the price of release for slaves. If you were going to buy back slaves, you'd pay a price. And Jesus says, I came to give my life, to pay back the price, to rescue you from slavery. And how amazing is this great God who's come to visit his people in Jesus. It is so, he's so great that he can give his one life for many. So what would you expect if God came to visit the earth? Would you see him holding parades? Or would you see him serving people? Jesus says about himself, and this is a great authority to take it from. Don't take it from me or from the Gospel of Mark. Take it right here from Jesus' own words about himself. I came to serve, not to be served. I came to give my life as a ransom for many. So that's what we celebrate when we tell the stories of Jesus. It's what we do when we worship. It's what we do when we pray. And we say, Jesus came all the way to walk among us, to serve, and to go straight to the cross. And we're going to join him on that journey now as we look at Mark over the next several weeks. So I would say this. This is the invitation. For those of you who are in bondage and slavery, I want you to begin, even if it feels awkward or unusual, to trust that this is good news, that Jesus paid the price to rescue you out. Jesus paid that price. He gave the ransom. And for those of you who have ambitions to be great, you say, I'm talented, I'm well-connected, I have all the resources. You know, Jesus shows the way into that. It's to serve. It's to serve people. It's what we do when we stay overnight here at the night shelter. It's what we do when we wash dishes or set out a meal or pick up after the house of prayer, set out the chairs. It's what we do. The way to greatness is to serve. And it's an invitation to all of you. If you want to follow Jesus but you don't know how to get started, I'll just invite you to come with us on this journey. Step by step, with Jesus on the move, week after week, it's right here in his word. We'll go through it together, and we're going to follow him. But he's going to a difficult place. He's going to the place of the cross. And yet, it doesn't stop there. Spoiler alert. Jesus conquers death on our behalf. And he brings life and resurrection and hope. So I hope you join us on this journey as we open Mark and as we look to Jesus, the Son of Man, the suffering servant, and our ransom. Let me pray for us. Oh God, how great you are. We sing your worship and your praise because you do deserve all praise and honor and glory. And we do that because, like ransomed people, like rescued people from slavery and bondage, you deserve it. And so we give you thanks, and we thank you for the gift of your Son who came to serve and to pay the price on our behalf. We couldn't have done it on our own. I admit, God, just like these disciples, I would have wanted position and privilege and influence and power, and yet you call me to serve the way you do. And you rescue me from my ambition, from my drive, and you call me into, and you call us into a life of freedom and joy, of servanthood, which is giving out of an overflow of gratitude because of what you've done for us on the cross. God, would you make us that kind of people here at the mission? Not just in this building on a Sunday, but through the week in our places of work, in our places of school, in our homes, with our families, with our friends. Make us people who serve out of joy. And we ask that you would do this, Jesus, because you are so good. Amen.